Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Jill Kaufman. Virtual reality has been a 3D technological dream for decades, embodied by the dream of donning a pair of special goggles and being transported to another world.
The reality of virtual reality. Until recently, it has remained a crude digital landscape that often left people unimpressed or maybe nauseous or sometimes both.
But now the technology is making a comeback, led by a sophisticated virtual reality headset called the Oculus Rift. And last year, Facebook bought the company that makes the Rift for $2 billion.
Now, Facebook, Sony, HTC, and Samsung all say they have a consumer headset that will be out in the next 12 months. And virtual reality software companies are popping up everywhere, including here in Boston.
One local company is Tribe, which wants to create shared virtual reality social experiences. And we'll talk more about its potential uses in a few minutes. But first, though, a little demo. Andy Sen is a co-founder of Tribe, and he showed me with a simple application how all this works.
The Oculus Rift is a head-mounted display that are basically like ski goggles that you put on your head, and it transports you into a virtual world.
Skiing into blackness.
Yeah.
For a moment.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. I'm putting it on.
All right, so let me just load up this demo for you.
So Andy is sitting across the table from me. He has a computer screen in front of him.
So this is the original demo of Tribe, which I built. This is a realistic rendering of a virtual apartment. You can kind of look around. So if you turn around all the way, that's still kind of glitchy.
Yeah.
But
and wow, so there's a big full screen TV.
And
I'm
so,
about to watch something.
Right, so that's actually a video of my kitten at 3 months old. That's me holding her.
Wait, Andy, all this development for watching more stupid cat videos?
Yes, exactly. Well, the internet is cat videos. That's how we get VR to the forefront of this generation.
That's what it boils down to.
Yes.
Fabulous. Yes.
That's
so this
right.
is a big, beautiful, minimalist apartment.
Yeah.
Not a lot of furniture. And theoretically, there could be a party in this space.
So if we were online right now, you would see somebody sitting next to you and you would be able to talk to them, engage in a conversation. They would be able to change the video.
Well, so wait, in this red chair to my right?
Yeah.
Which has shadow on it from the sunlight. That's very good. There's like a window behind us and there's
yeah,
a shadow.
Exactly.
So there's an empty chair, which I keep putting my hand on as if I could see it.
That's very common, yeah.
Actually, I just found my hand and my feet.
Yeah. That's you.
That's me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm look like a teenage boy in Converse sneakers.
That's your new identity.
Okay, so right now his hand is on his knee. Some point in the future, will I be able to raise my hand?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Input is a big, big thing that people are solving right now. So the ability to do hand motions and things like that. Ultimately, I think virtual reality is a technology, not just something that you put on your head, but it's something that tracks your movement and tracks your positioning and really makes you feel like you're actually there. And so in terms of what you saw and feeling like you were, you know, distracted, quote unquote, and in this virtual world, I think there's a lot of implications we also have to think about in terms of how people interact with each other when they have these things strapped to their heads. That kind of stuff is really interesting to me.
Interesting to him, interesting to others as well. Users, investors, developers, and we're going to talk about all that in a moment. But Jill, first, I have to ask you, what did it feel like to be a teenage guy in Converse sneakers? I mean, did you feel truly transported to a different reality?
Andy is here, and we have another guest too, so we don't want to take up too much time. But I didn't realize, I was the uninformed radio listener. That's how I like to go into some of these things. And I didn't realize that I was going to be a part of it physically. Didn't know that it had developed that sophisticated present. And so when I saw myself, I was like, this is really amazing. I've always wanted to wear Converse. They're too flat for me. And, you know, I mean, truly. And I thought, I feel it. I do feel it. But what was transporting was to have sunlight and shadow, to be able to move my head and move around the room. That was, I mean, the room stayed with me as in a natural way. Do it right now.
Yeah.
You know, and there you are. So it was pretty cool. And Andy Sen is here along with Scott Kirzner. And we are going to talk more about this.
All right. Well, Andy Sen, as we mentioned, software developer at Tribe, who developed the Oculus Rift that Jill tried out there. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And so also here on Radio Boston is Scott Kirzner, and he is the innovation economy columnist for the Boston Globe, and he blogs at Beta Boston, and he recently wrote about Boston's up-and-coming virtual reality industry, and it's really good to have both of you here.
Thanks.
We want to hear from our listeners, too, which could be a lot of fun. Where do you want to go? You know, do you want to travel through the tunnels of the MBTA or stand on the edge of the John Hancock Tower? You know, imagine yourself wearing one of these goggles, basically, or swim from George's Island to Rose Wharf. You can do that if Tribe could make that kind of application. What
How
do you make
jumping
of
jumping out of an airplane?
How about? Know? Why not? You know?
From the comfort and safety of your own living room.
That's right. I know. And you don't move. That's the thing. Give us a call, 800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Radio Boston. But there's something else here, because this is an industry that we're going to hear about that has had a very slow glacial evolution. What do you make, listeners, of this wave of virtual reality? Do you buy it? Will you buy it? Do you need it? And do you think that Facebook's involvement and money can make it a more sure thing this time around? So again, thank you both for being here. Andy, if you'd say a little bit more right now about Tribe, your software company that you have with others, and what it's doing or trying to do.
Sure. So Tribe is basically, what I would call it, is a startup that's focused on incubating realistic, lifelike social experiences that can be shared with the people that you care about. And so, you know, we want to figure out what the best thing to do in VR is in terms of creating social experiences. And, you know, nobody's figured that out yet. So we're creating a series of different experiences that people can be a part of to see what sticks.
And will there be some more serious applications for what you're doing, as there might be, there have been business and industry, military applications for VR in the past? What about what your work is about?
Certainly. So my work, and also just the work of VR in general, has very profound implications on how business can be conducted in the future, both through training and also through things like telepresence, or actually feeling like you're working in the same shared space with someone without actually having to be there. And yeah.
Scott Kirshner, tell us about the tech industry in Boston and whether this city has the big players in the developing nature of VR now in 2015.
Well, I think whenever you look at a technology, you can trace its roots, or often when you look at a technology, you can trace its roots to Boston. So virtual reality is no different. There was a professor at MIT, Ivan Sutherland, who did the first in the 60s demo of virtual reality with obviously very primitive computers and displays. And they called it the sword of Damocles because it had this giant arm hanging in the room that held all the heavy equipment that you put your head into.
And it was much heavier and clunkier, right?
Yeah, and it spent decades being heavy and clunky, and the computers weren't quite fast enough to render the graphics realistically. But people really are looking at the Oculus headset, which developers have gotten their hands on for a year or two. Software developers have had for a year or two. It's not going to be sold to consumers until next year. But they're looking at this as really kind of a pivotal moment when, you know, maybe it's the iPhone moment for virtual reality, when it's something that everybody's going to be able to experience if they're interested.
I mean, is it too obvious to say, so what is the culture of the new companies that are building around this, like Tribe, and not all for socializing, but for other reasons?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are lots of game companies. That's the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, video gamers always want to be kind of more immersed in the environment, whether they're driving a race car, or, you know, playing, you know, fighting in a battle. And so the gaming industry really understood the potential here. And there are some companies in Boston. One of them is called Harmonix Music Systems, that's thinking about music-based games and visualizing music in new ways in these virtual spaces. So, you know, gaming is clearly going to be a kind of tip of the spear use for virtual reality.
Just a bit. Andy?
Yeah, and I would also add to that, in terms of being a huge gamer myself, I love being immersed in virtual experiences. And virtual reality is the ultimate immersive experience. But even more so, if you look at companies like Harmonix and you know, EA and these big gaming companies, they're really the only people that have been working on programs that can be ported into virtual reality in a 3D space. So they have the most talent that is capable of working on virtual reality today. And that's why you're going to be seeing gaming at the forefront for
at
a while.
At the forefront.
Andy, I have a question just about sort of imaginable virtual reality fantasy. That is, when you talk about creating social experiences, I'm imagining, so I know someone in California, I'm sitting in Boston, we can put on this headset and sort of sit next to each other and talk, right? So that's sort of a very basic social experience. But what do you imagine? I mean, what do you lie awake at night sort of, you know, really fantasizing about that you could do with this technology? Where's it going to take us?
Yeah, so I'm originally from California, and my fiance Ada lives there right now. And the reason I started Tribe was actually so we could create this type of experience that we felt like we were sharing together.
Yeah.
And really, ultimately, my dream is that anything you'll be able to do in real life as a social context can be done in virtual reality. So it doesn't have to be anything fantastical necessarily, but that feeling of presence that you get when you're actually physically there is something that other technologies can't currently reproduce.
We are sitting here talking with two very innovative, real people about virtual reality.
Nothing Andy virtual said, about
and,
this.
And Scott Kirzner. They're in here. This is not, you know, I can touch them if I could reach across the table. And we want to hear from you as well about what you think the applications of a developing, a truly developing virtual reality industry could be, which has been going, you know, in this direction since the 50s. But there's a lot of money now that's just in the last 2 years been infused from Facebook to buy this set that is the least clunky thing that has been developed yet. Please give us a call. Join us with your questions or comments about what to do with this and if you really need it in your lives. And maybe you do. And maybe you have a good application. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Cliff is calling from Waltham, Massachusetts. Cliff, thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Please go ahead with your comment.
Well, I guess I just wanted to ask about the premise of all these virtual reality technologies potentially being used in more of the educational format. So we understand that Facebook has acquired Oculus, and if I'm not mistaken, Pebble or Pebble Stone.
Mm-hmm.
However, how to utilize this in an online educational format such as TEDx or the Coursera's of the world?
Yeah, you know, one of the most amazing demos that I've seen was a student from Becker College out in Worcester, and he'd built a virtual version of the Worcester Art Museum that you could walk around and you could see the art on the walls.
Saw
and,
that,
You know, and he talked about the possibility. He was very interested in culture and education, and, you know, could you take a field trip to the pyramids of Giza without actually having to get on a plane and fly there? And so, you know, I love where you're getting at with your question that, you know, there's a lot more content than just games to be created here.
There is so many places that people want to get to in their lives and they can't. And if it's a reality, I mean, and I'm not even being playful with words, it's a reality they can't get on this airplane, for instance, to visit a monument in China or, you know, in Gaza.
Well, and I have some friends who just got back from the Galapagos. And whenever someone goes there, they go to Alaska, I always think, gee, what was the environmental impact of you traveling in that jet plane or that cruise ship to Alaska and the Galapagos? What if you could do it with your Oculus Rift headset?
Yeah, and one of the most touching things that I saw before I even had an Oculus Rift was a video of an old lady that had actually, unfortunately, recently been diagnosed with cancer, and she was at home and she couldn't explore her surroundings. But with the Oculus Rift, she was able to actually go to a villa in Tuscany and see everything and be outside and feel like she was actually there. And that really, you know, speaks to what virtual reality could be for people.
So who is the target audience for this? There's the consumer model. There's me wanting to get one for our household. But there's also industry. Can you talk about those different parties who might be buying this equipment at what cost also? If you know.
Well,
if you know.
You know, I think some of the headsets we're talking about $200 and up, potentially $350 for this new headset that Sony's working on. There are some headsets where you can actually take your existing smartphone and put them into a headset. So you're kind of using your smartphone as the computer and the display, and the headset just has some lenses.
That already exists now?
Yeah, that already exists now. Samsung has a product called the Gear VR. But in terms of other uses, I mean, it's like looking at the telephone and saying, well, gee, what are all the applications for telephone calls going to be? I've seen really interesting business uses for architects. You know, rather than showing somebody blueprints and renderings, put on a headset and let them walk around their future house. There's also a lot in surgical and medical simulation, walking people through complicated procedures before they actually have to do it on a person.
Can you imagine that this is these headsets are going to be safely used for some reason in a public space? Do I mean outside? Do I mean in the workspace? Like in a radio station? I mean, I absolutely, through an architect's mind, I can imagine doing the kind of work that an architect does without having to go on site and getting a real sense of what needs to be built. What else?
Yeah, so how I see it is virtual these headsets are basically mediums, just like the touch screen or your computer screen or the computer monitor that you've grown to work on every single day. And the way that people are going to interact with this head-mounted display is going to change as the technology evolves. Right now, they're big, clunky things that you put on your head. But you can see with things like Google Glass, which didn't do as well as many thought, but the technology is getting better. And eventually, that's what virtual reality displays are going to look like. They're going to look like glasses that you wear.
Listeners, get in on this if you can. If you have, especially if you have, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Find us on Facebook today, Twitter at Radio Boston. We want to hear from you thinking about yet another device in your life and what you might do with it or what you might not do with it. And we want to hear about that as well. Do you need a VR device in your household or in your workplace? We'd like to hear from you. 800-423-8255. Marion is calling from the Back Bay in Boston. Hello, Marion.
Hi. Nice to have this moment to ask you a few questions. I'm actually involved in medical education, and I have seen this device and seen some of its very interesting applications. But at a time when patients are incredibly concerned about coming into doctors who are now basically looking at the computer screen and filling out the electronic health record, and more patients are saying, you know, my doctor looked at me for about a minute, that there is something about the virtual reality issue that could potentially get out of hand or create problems that we didn't anticipate. It's that kind of disconnect. And in areas like medicine, I think it has great applications, tremendous applications, because of teaching. But I just wonder, in this big discussion, do you think about that? I mean, it's interesting. Sherry Turkle has written a lot about this. He's now talking, after having been in the field for over 30 years, about the disconnect and that we are really moving away from each other because of some of these devices.
Mm-hmm. Great, Marion. Good questions, good points, too. So we've got privacy matters and also that disconnect that is happening with our lives online. Scott, will you take a slice of this?
Yeah, I think with every technology, there's the potential for it to come between people when you should be having an eye-to-eye, face-to-face conversation. I mean, what I like so much about what Andy's doing with Tribe is that it is about trying to connect people who just aren't in the same room or the same space together. But I do think there's that potential for it to be one more thing. And you are really putting on this headset that blocks out the world, and you're often putting on headphones that block out the sound of the world that, you know, is this kind of Plato and the cave, you know, taking us into a simulated space that maybe takes us further away from other people. So I definitely seek some concerns.
Yeah. So two things on the privacy concerns. You know, Facebook obviously bought Oculus, and there's the concern there. I think in the future, as the industry continues to mature, you'll see more and more players and device headset manufacturers create these headsets that are not Facebook. So we'll be able to see medical training simulations run on everything, not just the Oculus. Secondly, you know, the reason I started Tribe was actually not to put people in a virtual world where they couldn't communicate. It was to make the possibility of feeling closer to my fiance a reality, essentially, because I want to feel like I'm actually in the room with someone I maybe can't see right now, and I'm sure all of us have these types of experiences in our lives where we wish we could be somewhere that we couldn't, somebody's birthday.
Andy, I'm going to ask this, and it's going to come out quite differently than I mean it, probably. How intimate an experience is that?
Yeah,
and what I mean,
wondering that too.
Well, what I mean is how close can you feel to your fiancé who's X thousands of miles away?
Yeah, sure. So today, the technology is still kind of far away, right? But I would rather be too early than too late. The technology can make you feel like you're physically present in the same room. But in terms of me actually feeling like it's my fiance, I think that's still a little bit far away because of the limitations of graphics and eye tracking and all of these things.
So I was sort of a headless being on that couch when I was that 20-year-old boy, which if you heard the demo earlier, when you and your fiance are on that couch watching the stupid cat videos, do you have do you have heads or do you have faces? Are you in live time or is it
Yeah, so you would have a realistic rendering of an avatar that represents who you are, and the other person would be able to see you and see and track your head and eye movements. And you would be able to interact with them.
All right. We are talking with Scott Kersner and with Andy Sen about virtual reality, the industry, where it's going. And it's going somewhere now with $2 billion of money backing a particular device from Facebook. We want to hear from you if there's still a little bit of time left in your afternoon, 800-423-8255. Let's go to Dan calling in from Mission Hill today. Hey, Dan.
Hi there.
Go ahead with your comment.
Hi, I'm the executive director of the New Law Lab at Northeastern Law School, and I want to raise the possibility of using this type of technology for social good. We are building a game right now to help educate people who don't have lawyers to be able to represent themselves better in court. And it's two-dimensional right now, but I just think of the incredible potential if we could give people without who can't afford lawyers the ability to navigate a courtroom in three dimensions, and therefore do a better job when they have to do it for real.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
Yeah, certainly. So actually, Chris Milk, who's a really famous virtual reality videographer, recently gave a TED Talk on this where he took his camera rig and went to a Syrian refugee camp and recorded in a 360 panoramic view, you know, the life, the living conditions of a little girl that was living there and her daily life and how hard life had been since they had been displaced. And then he went to the United Nations and he showed some people there the experience in virtual reality, and they were all touched, right? And so that's the thing that virtual reality can be used for in terms of social good. I think it can really make people feel and understand the circumstances of both other people as well as make them understand their own realities.
I've been loving this conversation so much, and I wanted to sort of propose a kind of final question to you, Scott, the same question that I asked Andy Sen at the beginning. I mean, in the reporting that you've done on this, what has sort of wowed you the most in terms of where this technology could take us?
I get wowed every time I put the headset on to see something new, whether it's the college student who built the Worcester Art Museum in virtual reality, or some guys in Cambridge who built Flume Gorge up in New Hampshire and Claustral Canyon in Australia, and these places that I would probably never go because I'm not a spelunker, I'm not a climber. And so just it's like seeing a new medium evolve and saying, okay, we're here at the early days of television, the early days of radio or the telephone, and what are all the possibilities? So, you know, it's really just going to be fascinating to watch for the next year or two and see the whole spectrum.
It will be, and we'll be watching it with you, Scott and Andy. Thank you both so much for joining us. Scott Kersner is the innovation economy columnist for the Boston Globe, among other things. He also blogs at Beta Boston. Andy Sen, co-founder of Tribe Virtual Reality. Thanks to you both.
Thanks. Thank you.
And stay with us. From virtual reality to a real road trip through New England's best summer art exhibits with art critic Sebastian Smee. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Jill Kaufman, and this is Radio Boston.